AgriTalk is brought to you by Full Scale from Helena. Grow strong returns this season with breakthrough foliar nutrition from Full Scale at Reproduction. And by propane. Propane is the energy for everyone, especially farmers. Environmentally friendly propane can fuel most anything on the farm. See how at propane.com. Hey.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. Our name says it all. AgriTalk. What more do you need to know?
AgriTalk for the ladies in the morning now.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm Chip. Glad that you are with us. The U.S. Meat Export Federation Spring Conference is happening this week in Minneapolis. Joining us now to get us up to speed on what happens at the conference is Dan Hallstrom. He is the president and CEO of the U.S. Meat Export Federation. Good morning, Dan.
Good morning, Chip. Pleasure to be here.
Glad that you are. And with Dan is Matt Copeland, the Africa representative of the U.S. Meat Export Fed. Matt, welcome to AgriTalk. It's good to talk with you.
Thank you, Chip. Great to be with you.
Glad that you are here as well. Dan, what's the conference all about? What are the goals?
Well, we bring our membership together twice a year, and we're in Minneapolis this week. Opportunity for all nine sectors of membership to come together and talk about demand globally, the issues and the successes that go into that, and it's just to get input from all nine sectors, including producer sectors, exporter sectors. It's just invaluable in helping to build a strategy and, more importantly, implement that strategy. So we're really looking forward to some really good discussion this week, especially considering it through the first quarter. The export trends are looking pretty positive on both pork and beef.
Good. At the conference, what you're really doing is you're putting the entire supply chain in one room, aren't you?
We really are. Yeah.
Yeah.
And really it's about telling the story of what's working and in a lot of cases, some of the barriers are keeping us from achieving those goals and having everyone in the room together, the whole supply chain, as you say, so to speak, is very effective.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, there are meetings that are very, very effective for an industry. You know, I'm thinking of the U.S. Soy Export Council's conference in August, but yours, it's got to be right at the top of the list because you've got some excellent success stories coming out of this conference. It's why you do it two times a year, right?
Exactly right. Yeah. And it really takes everybody to be at the table. I mean, we have the corn industry. We have the soybean industry. Yeah. Of course, we have the beef, pork and lamb producing industries as well and our exporters. So, it's really a recipe for success.
It certainly is. Certainly is. We're going to talk about the potential of the African market here in a moment. But you mentioned that the first quarter is looking good. What is making the meat export market look good for us, Dan?
Well, demand in general continues to be strong. There's a lot of headwinds. I mean, we've got inflationary impacts. We have higher input prices. We have in certain regions of the world a strong U.S. dollar, and although that's moderated to some extent, which is a good thing, but still a headwind in markets like Japan, for example. But, you know, outside of that, demand is good. And on pork, I'll start with pork real quick. We're up substantially in the first quarter. There's a lot of things driving that, but demand in Latin America has been phenomenal, led by Mexico. And demand in Asia, while still lagging a little bit, is starting to show signs of recovery and food service and tourism rebound in that part of the world post-COVID. We were just experiencing COVID in most of Asia just 6 months ago. We're starting to see that come around. So some real positives. On the beef side, we're down a bit from a year ago, last year's phenomenal record. But the month of March in particular saw some really good trend lines in some key markets, Mexico, for example, and Japan showed a rebound. So even though production's down and availability of products down a bit, we're still pretty bullish on beef as well going forward.
Good. The Asian market is something that we always talk about. But, Dan, I love the fact that you focus on Latin America and Central America. It just feels like a powder keg of potential demand coming out of that area.
Exactly right. Yeah. And that's one part of the world, Mexico, for example, where the U.S. dollar has actually weakened. So yep. We have a little bit of a tailwind there, which is in sharp contrast to most of Asia. But it's really about putting the whole world together to maximize the carcass. And you're going to, that's one thing we're going to be talking a lot about at the meeting this week is what do we do to maximize the value of the carcass? And the carcass mix into Latin America is almost the antithesis of the carcass mix into Asia. So putting it together, you're not competing against each other. I mean, a lot of rounds, for example, go to Latin America, whereas a lot of chucks and thin meats, the marbled product goes to Asia. So in a lot of ways, they complement each other. And this is what we really focus on, not only at MEF, but with our industry partners.
That's awesome. That is awesome. All right, Matt, how does Africa fit into this carcass utilization? How's the market developing there?
Yeah, Chip, it's a great question. In terms of Africa, obviously, we are protein deficient. So we have a huge, huge population, currently 1.45 billion people. And historically, we've struggled to feed ourselves over there. So from a nutrition point of view, we need to get valuable nutrition from protein sources, and we don't produce enough on the continent. So things like beef variety meats, for example, we have triple-digit growth year on year, admittedly off a smaller base last year. And we're still at the very thin edge of the wedge as we build into some more countries. But certainly, African markets, balancing the carcass, variety meats, we need those all day. Beef livers, beef kidneys, hearts, head meat, all of those things we use in processing in-country. Countries like South Africa, Mozambique, on the West Coast, Senegal, Cote d'Ivoire, Gabon. So there is a long runway here. Lot of supply chain development that still needs to happen. But companies like big retailers in South Africa, well established, over 2,500 stores, employing over 150,000 people. That's close to governmental scale in most of Africa. These big employers, you know, once we get product kind of through their doors and into their distribution channels, one, payment secure, two, they understand merchandising better than some of them. They've been pioneering this African quest for a very long time. And we're happy to say we work closely with these folks. So it's a massive privilege. Other things, obviously, we're going to see pork finally from an arbitrage point of view work into the African region. We'll see. We've seen the first few containers of pork ribs going into South Africa, and we'll see more of that certainly. We're a big importer historically and traditionally, just the economics just didn't work, and at the moment it looks like a glimmer of hope. From that point of view, we can offer destination demand. But other things like you wouldn't have thought, but pork hearts, for example, there's a national arbitrage into South Africa. We make a sausage with that product. And there's probably 30 to 40 loads there a month that can work. And we're working closely with FAS in country, as well as Dallard, which is the South African vet side of things, to make sure that this product can come. And we've had a few hurdles, and this has been happening for a very long time, but we think we're quite close in getting that over the line as well. So excellent. Not just beef. Excellent. Yep.
Yeah. Dan, the organizing this trade, what is there, like 54 countries in Africa, something like that. Now, do you have to develop it on a country by country basis, or is this a continental development?
Yeah, no, Chip, it's a really good question. So, you know, we have over 3,000 language kind of types. So culturally, we've over 2,000 tribes. So to look at the African continent and go, look, it's just one dark place and we're going to throw some cheap stuff at it, it's never going to work. Right. You have to get into the granular. You have to go in committed and sincerely, with authenticity, with an agenda to go, if I trade fairly here, I'll be able to make money on an ongoing basis for a very long time. And once we open a channel, make sure that we've thought about steps 2 and 3 to make sure we keep those channels open. So for example, variety meats into South Africa. That's a trade that's been going on for a very, very long time. And it's a trade that will carry on. from South Africa, they feed out into places like for these kind of lower value items, Mozambique, Swaziland, Lesotho, Botswana, up through Zimbabwe into Zambia, even as far as Lubumbashi in the copper belt of the DRC. So the point that I'm making is those supply channels on the internal legs of the continent are fairly well established. But what we need to do is make sure we're approaching the right countries with the right kind of agenda. Angola, Portuguese speaking, make sure we're equipped for that. Make sure we have understandings of some of the requirements. So each of these countries have slightly different kind of veterinary regulations. They need different certificates. And honestly, those are good. They protect the quality of the trade and they make sure that Africa doesn't become a dumping ground. We don't want to be associated with any poor qualities, particularly not from the USA. We want to make sure everyone thinks that anything coming from the US into our markets is absolutely premium. It's produced in a sustainable and excellent way. We deliver that message repeatedly, and the point is it's not a dumping ground. But with that, there are some other complexities. We need Bureau Veritas certificates for some countries. We need Francophonic labels for some. Some need to make sure that they're halal, some not. And all of these, they just spread complexity. But the nice thing is when there's complexity and disorganization, that's a recipe for, it's a dream recipe for a trader.
Right. Absolutely. Dan, understanding the complexities of that African market, it sounds like Matt's got a strong handle on it, but what a huge, huge opportunity that we've got in Africa.
Without a doubt. I mean, I get pretty excited talking about Africa as a whole. I get the question a lot about what's the next horizon, Japan and Korea and Mexico are great markets, but what's next? Well, the answer is the African region. And, it's, as you said, 52, 53 republics or states in Africa, but we're not focusing on all of them. We're developing where the economics make sense, and Matt's got a great handle on that. So
gotcha. You guys, thank you so much for the time. Have a great conference, and we'll talk with you again soon.
Thank you so much, Chip.
All right, Dan Holstrom, President, U.S. Meat Export Federation, and Matt Copeland.